So, good morning. My name is Andrew Bettany, I'm from the UK, and I'm really hyped to be able to present to you this morning on some of the security features of Windows 8. Thank you for attending. Some of the things that we're going to talk about today, and reasons why we're going to talk about them, is I want you to go back to your workplace, or back to your college, or university, or wherever you're coming from, and take back some of the must-have security features in Windows 8 and use those and implement them. Why? Because I'm concerned that many people who use Windows 8 are just not leveraging the security benefits that are part of the investment you've made. So by the end of today, what I'm hoping to do is highlight the new and the evolved security features such as BitLocker, Secure Boot, even things like VPN Reconnect that we're going to talk about in the session. I'm going to focus on the Windows 8 security features and some of the enhancements and improvements as we've seen coming through the last few years. I want you to be able to go back and explain them, to show them, and to start implementing them. I'm going to predominantly focus on BitLocker. Two or three of the parts that I'm going to cover are on BitLocker, because BitLocker has made a huge improvement over the last couple of years, and we're going to see in Windows 8 and 8.1 that continue. I hope you'll find by the end of this session that by enabling some of these really easy to configure and to implement features, that your users will start to appreciate security within the business. They will start thanking you as IT people that you've implemented these things, because a lot of the pain of security comes back to you and the users. And by trying to remove some of that hurdle, that pain, for example, resetting a password in BitLocker or deploying to a machine that's got BitLocker enabled, is a pain for you as IT, and it's also a pain for the users. And we're going to cover those things today. So the items that we're going to cover today, I'm going to cover these eight topics: the modern operating system, BitLocker pre-provisioning, BitLocker automatic unlock, BitLocker to go, the credential manager, VPN reconnect, secure boot, and Windows to go. Now I'm hoping that some of these features you've seen before. I'm hoping also that some of these, because they're quite new, you haven't seen before. We're going to pull them all together in one session and sprinkle a few demos in there, and hopefully you're going to go away thinking, I'm going to implement that, because that's going to change my users' lives. It's going to make them so much happier, and they can start using IT rather than crying about it. So, what do we mean by this term, modern operating system? Well, it's modern as opposed to old. Think about, if you buy a modern car, it's going to have some modern features. The point we're trying to make here with Windows 8 is, if you use Windows 8 or even Windows 7 to a point, and you don't use some of the security features in there, it's like buying a new car and then leaving it unlocked. You're not using some of the security benefits of that car. So Windows 8 and 7 at the moment, and I mean that, at the moment, are classed as modern. We're going to see throughout this session, I'm going to drive you to the hardware that Windows 8 is actually using. The hardware within Windows 8 is modern. There's some new things in the hardware which we've been waiting for, and this is why Windows 7 didn't have those features in there, that enable new security features, and we're going to unpack those later on this morning. The second point in this slide is Windows 7 and Windows 8 were built with today's threat in mind. And that's quite important, that when you go back and talk about today's threat, today's security vectors, only Windows 7 and Windows 8 are built with that in mind. There's just security threats out there that were not there 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. They weren't imagined. And these things are going to get evolved, just like Windows is going to be reimagined and re-engineered and evolved for the next 5, 10 years. So are the security threats, and we need to keep one step ahead of the game, or at least par with the threats. So, some key similarities between Windows 7 and Windows 8, and hopefully you should be able to resonate with some of these. There's many shared features, which means your users will adopt them fairly easily. You'll have looked under the hood of 7 and 8 and said, well, they're very similar. Yes, some of them are, and that's on purpose so that your learning, your change is not radically different. The deployment methodology. I don't know how many of you are using Windows 7 now, but the learning that you used, that you learnt to get to that deployment strategy is going to be reusable on Windows 8. You'll use the same tools. The learning that you've used or you've implemented within your business to get your people up to either Vista or Windows 7 or Windows 8 is an asset. Okay, you're not going to have to re-engineer that every time. One thing I noted when I was preparing for this session was, as IT administrators, we don't really let our users see that mini video. You know the mini video that when you install Windows 8, we used to have this in XP and previous versions, like a little what to do while it's installing, and it had the swipes. I would guess most of your users never see that. So just bear that in mind when you're deploying Windows 8 to a new user who might not have that at home. They might not understand this elementary swiping. You might want to just make a little video of that and show that as part of your training exercise. For the first 5 minutes, when they get a new PC, they must do this mandatory training, which is look at that video. That's why Microsoft put it in there, so that you've got a head start. But think about it, IT guys, we don't really watch that anymore, and we don't really give that to our users. So bear that in mind. So what are the key differentiators between 7 and 8? Hardware security. Hopefully this week you'll have heard about the UEFI or UEFI firmware upgrades that have been coming through. Now this is not a new technology, it's been in the pipeline for about 5 years. What's happening is it's maturing, it's getting to the point where it's a standard-based firmware now. Microsoft are leveraging that. They didn't invent this, they're just leveraging it. So that is a key factor now in modern operating systems, is let's get the secure firmware in place before we start putting our operating system on top. We couldn't do that in XP, we couldn't really do that in 7 because not enough of us had that hardware. Malware. You might have heard, certainly, quite a few of the sessions this week have all been about malware. In Windows 8, it's built in from the ground up. So it's got an antivirus in there. It's looking out for you. It's covering your back on malware. If malware is detected through the Defender or through as the Windows machine boots up, and we'll talk about that with Secure Boot later on, and Trusted Boot and Measured Boot, we'll talk about those things later on, that's protecting your back. That's there to help you. What do we mean by pervasive encryption? What I mean is, for a business, anyone who's got professional or enterprise, and that should be most of us here, BitLocker is included. And that's a change from Windows 7. So BitLocker is included on all business SKUs. So you've really got no excuse. Yeah, we'll talk about BitLocker. I'm going to focus on half the session is going to be on BitLocker and BitLocker improvements. Finally, what do I mean by modern access control? A lot of news in the press in the last year about passwords are being phased out or they're insecure. Now, your mileage may vary. You've been using passwords for several years. You know that most users will write them down on a little bit of paper, or they'll try and use the same one over and over again. That's what we mean about them being a soft target for hackers. So we're moving forward very quickly into two form factors. So biometrics is a key one, smart cards is a key one, using pictures and pins. They're all adding to the complexity of access control. So can you see, a modern operating system is so much more than just a few new bells and whistles on the desktop. It's the whole ecosystem of that operating system. So when you compare 7 to 8, you're comparing all those things. And when you compare XP to 7 and 8, it's like, well, look at the landscape, look at the threats. Are we talking about fit for purpose now? Let's move on. So BitLocker, what I mean by pervasive is it should be there everywhere. How many of us restricted and held back from using BitLocker in the early days of, So quite a few people putting their hands up. So when it was first emerging, and when did it first come out? What operating system was it? Vista. Well done. In fact, you win one of my books, sir. Just while he comes and collects it. I wrote a book on Windows 8 certification. I've got a few copies. I'll be asking a few questions throughout the morning. So, why do we hold back on Vista? Well, because we typically hold back on the first version of anything, don't we? Okay. So, it was released in Vista, it was improved in 7, it's now in 8, and it's been improved again. So, I wouldn't like to say it's the third version, but you know where I'm going with this. The fact it's now in each business SKU makes it even more appealing. Now, this is not, you know, if someone was to accuse Microsoft and say, well, look, are you really serious about security? This would be a really good way of them saying, yes, we are, because we're going to give it away for every business user. Now, another criticism of BitLocker in the early days was, oh, it's going to take some of my speed away from my PC. All right? And yes, it does. But what have we got coming? You know, for the last 2 years, we've had the benefit of SSD drives. You know, most of your machines will be quad-core SSD drives, multiple processors, lots of RAM. You know, let's put a little bit of that effort back into securing the system rather than just going faster and faster and faster. So it's not such an overhead killer anymore. Okay. Just a quick talk about Windows RT. What do we mean by device encryption? I think they mentioned this in the keynote as well, that all tablet devices that run Windows 8 will benefit from device encryption, which uses the same technology as BitLocker, but doesn't have the administrative portal over the top of it. So it's on by default. So you are protected using BitLocker technology without that overlay on all Windows 8 devices and tablets. So, changes between 7 and 8. Some of these are really interesting. All business class SKUs we've mentioned already now come with BitLocker. You've got no excuse. So this includes BitLocker to go, BitLocker on the hard drive. Use it. One of the things we had a couple of years ago was not all devices had the TPM chip. You're thinking I'm going to give away another book for what does TPM stand for? You should know what TPM stands for already. It's a trusted platform module. Now, what does that mean? It means it's a chip on your motherboard, no bigger than your fingernail, that holds the key to BitLocker. That's, in the simplest terms, that's all it does. It securely is like a wall around a key, and it will only release that key to the other half of BitLocker, which is the operating system. It says, can I have the key? Yes, I trust you. There you go. Unlock that drive. But a few years ago, TPM chips were not that available, and they were an additional cost. Nowadays, nearly every business class machine, will have TPM because it costs literally a couple of dollars to throw that onto the motherboard. So expect to see it now. So, and we're going to show you as well. I'm using a virtual machine to do some of the demos. That doesn't have a TPM chip. There is a way, and it's supported. You can run BitLocker without a TPM. You can use a smart card or a password or a PIN instead. What we're saying is, if you've got a TPM, use it, because that is the most secure way to run BitLocker. Firmware-based TPM, so you can have that's a software-based within your hardware, within your motherboard. So it can be software-emulated as well, and that's a new feature, almost like virtual TPM. We've seen recently, you know, if you've been deploying BitLocker, it's just going to get easier and easier. One of the things I'm going to touch on shortly is the pre-provisioning of BitLocker, because one of the complaints we had was it takes a long time for BitLocker to be enabled on a drive. And yes, it did. And we're going to cover that shortly. MBAM. You might have seen Chris Hallam's talk yesterday. He was talking about MBAM and the whole management platform that assists large organizations when they want to deploy and manage BitLocker and the retention of BitLocker keys. I'm going to refer to that at the end of the session in some related content. Pick that up at the end and review that if you need to as well. And finally, just at the bottom line we've got there, we're now server ready as well. So you should be thinking, if I haven't got any of my machines in a data center that's got, walls around it and an armed police outside, if these servers are in your building, consider putting them on BitLocker as well. All right? And it covers the networking as well, the SANs and clusters even. So there's quite a few radical changes there. So Let's look at these three things. BitLocker pre-provisioning, BitLocker automatic network unlock, and then BitLocker to go. Now hopefully, I think, I've picked these three things out. There's another, you know, two or three things that have improved in BitLocker as well, but these for me were the important ones that as IT admins, we need to go back and start using them. So, BitLocker pre-provisioning, what I mean. So it encrypts the disk as we write to it. So if you've got a 1 terabyte drive, for example, and you've only got 50 gigs of data on there, those 50 gigs will get encrypted, and the remainder will wait until you start copying data to it, and then it'll be done on the fly. Just like you would do anyway. So if you've got a drive and you start copying files onto it, they're gonna be BitLocker encrypted. What this does is save you the time of encrypting all those blank zeros at the end in advance of time. And it makes a massive difference. You're looking at a 40 times improvement in speed to deploy an operating system with BitLocker. So it's worth ticking the box to say, let's have use space only. All right? And we'll see down there on the slide the manage BDE command, and it says on, which means turn BitLocker on, and the used command is to signify to the command to BitLocker to use the used space only. Hope that makes sense. So, for another book, quick question, and I'm looking in this area. No, I'm not. I'm looking in both areas. What does MDE stand for? Sorry, what does BDE stand for? BitLocker?
BitLocker disk encryption.
Ooh, close. Who said that? BitLocker drive encryption. Come forward, sir. Another exam ref for Windows 8, book for you, sir. And if you want these autographed, let me know. Thank you. BitLocker drive encryption, BDE. Okay, and we'll do this in a second. And we'll look at a status command as well, which gives you the information of whether or not it's been enabled or disabled. Okay. Okay. Let's have a quick look. So when you pre-provision a BitLocker drive, you've not actually given it necessarily the password or the smart card or the TPM yet, because you've just rolled out the command onto that machine. So it's not fully protected, it's BitLocker enabled, but what will happen is you'll see it's saying, look, it's waiting for activation. It's waiting for the user to go in and tick the box and say, this is my password. Because remember, we don't want to give passwords to users. That's their job. They create the password because they need to unlock their machine. So we need them to activate this and actually give the what's called the protector. So the password is a protector. Right. So it's turned on, it's encrypted the drive. When they click this button, they'll spend no more than 1 minute putting the password in and clicking OK, and it's encrypted. Not the 15 minutes or 2 hours it would take normally on Windows 7. All right. Just a quick overview of the workflow. We encrypt the volume, we then deploy the system image, and then we activate it at the end. So to encrypt it, and we'll run this in a second, we do manage BDE, switch on BitLocker, use a new feature which is use drive space only, and then give it a drive letter. Now this will work for all drives. If you use it on a system drive, you need to give the protector there and then. You need to give it the password, or you need to give it the TPM or the smart card at that point. All right, so you actually define the protector here. If it's a data drive, like a D drive, E drive, or F drive, you can just do it on the fly, and it will then ask you later on. Yes, it will. Yes, you can BitLocker thumb drives, data drives, system drives, VHDs. Yes. Then you would deploy the operating system, and you'd use your favorite tool for that, which could be MDT, it could be WDS, it could be DSIM. However you deploy your image, system center, you push the image down with the flag within that system saying, it's going to be onto a BitLocker enabled drive. We're going to use this as part of our pre-provisioning. Okay. And then finally, we saw in the console, we can go into the control panel, or we can do it by PowerShell, or we can do it by command line. We activate BitLocker by providing the protector. Okay. So this one is the longest talking part of the whole session, so bear with me. Operating systems work slightly different to data drives. So data drives would be your VHDs, your thumb drives, your D drives and F drives, such like. So operating systems, they need to have more security. So you can have TPM, for example. Yes, you can override that and take that component away, but you need to tell group policy to do that. And I'll show you the setting for that. Okay. You can have multiple authentication. You have a TPM, startup key, and a PIN if you want to. You know, bear in mind what is BitLocker all about, especially on a hard drive in your machine. It's there to marry the two components together. It keeps that disk with that motherboard. It stops that machine, if it gets stolen, it stops that hard drive being taken away and somebody trying to hack into it. That's all it does. So let's not make it into encrypting file system. It's not EFS. All right? It is to stop that drive being stolen. So beware that, you know, this TPM chip, that's doing its job without your knowledge. If it's connected to the TPM in the motherboard, in that machine, it's working, it's doing its job. It's releasing the key to Microsoft. Sorry, to Windows 8. It's releasing the key, and that's then enabling you to read the data. All right? So I've certainly seen people use every single type of unlock method, and users start getting a bit frustrated when you give them too much to remember, you know, especially on a daily basis. It's doing its job just by having a TPM chip. Okay, notice on the data drives we can have this automatic unlock, and that's not the same as what I'm going to be talking about in a second, which is my automatic network unlock. Okay, so for a thumb drive, you might want to put that into your machine, and the user might say, I actually want this to be unlocked every time I put it into my machine, because it's my USB drive. All right, and that's a nice feature. Just be aware that if you don't use a password on a regular basis, what happens to it? You forget it. All right. So why is this useful for users? We're empowering, within Windows 8 this time, we're empowering users themselves, okay, to do these things themselves. They can encrypt their own computer. They can encrypt their own USB drives, their hard drives themselves using BitLocker. They can change and reset the BitLocker PIN. You couldn't do this in Windows 7. They can also now change the BitLocker passwords. This was a pain, and Microsoft listened to the help desk saying, look, empower the users to do this. I've left this slide in because if you're going to consume this after hours, then these are the commands that you might want to look at. We're going to actually go through and do some of these things just now. All right. But you can see the three main ones. The manage BDE, turn it on and use space only. The second one is the status, which I'm going to show you. And the last one is where you add a protector. And this is where we're saying add a password. And then you'd actually give it the password. Now, I'm making an assumption that you all understand a little bit about group policy. Group policy, all the things I've been talking about today have been expanded to cover these new features. So group policy allows you to fine-tune on a person-by-person, PC-by-PC basis all these different factors. So you get to choose whether or not the user can encrypt the whole drive or only data drives, whether or not they can use disk space only or use full encryption. All right. Now notice that little note at the bottom, if you use a GPO on an existing system, okay, that's already been BitLockered, it will not have any effect. You need to turn BitLocker off, configure it using GPO, and then let the GPO in effect take effect. So let's drop into group policy. The way I'm going to show you is this setting as well. It's where we can enforce drive encryption and a certain type of drive encryption on our operating system drives. Now this should be one of the things that I think you should be going back and actually saying, look, we're going to do this. Especially all new Windows 8 machines, let's just nail security. The last thing you want on your CV, your resume, your career is, yes, my company went bust or went down the pan because we had a laptop stolen and 100 million data files got stolen on the train. If you use BitLocker, you're mitigating against that risk. So bear that in mind. So let's have a quick look into the demo. So if I drop into group policy, now I can, you all know the Windows X key, Windows key and X. You've got your your run command at that point, and we'll look at gp edit.msc. And what I'm looking for is administrative templates, Windows components, and you'll see there, hopefully, a bit like a drive encryption. And what I'm going to look at now is on the operating system drives, and I'll zoom in again in a second, is this one here, which I've already configured, require additional authentication in startup. Now, that doesn't sound that interesting, so let's click in there and see what options it gives us. And don't you just love group policy where it gives you a huge amount of help there and then on the right-hand side? So what we can see here is the allow BitLocker to work without a compatible TPM chip. So by ticking that box, you're overriding that prerequisite of BitLocker. It means you've got to give it a different type of protector. But you know, it overcomes that requirement that, oh, you've only got to buy TPM chips. Yes and no. You can run it without. Okay. So do not allow TPM chip or require TPM chip. You decide. All right. Then you set up all the different options that we talked about on the slide before, which gives you different levels of startup. So I'm going to leave it as it was, which is allow it to run without a TPM because I'm using it in a virtual machine. Other ones that we're going to look at is, where's the one, the enforce encryption? There we go. So I'll double click the drive encryption. And if we enable this, we can say, look, allow our users to select whether or not they can quickly provision their drives or whether or not you want to fully encrypt. Yep. Again, some people are saying, well, oh, if it's only a partial encryption, that's not quite as secure. And I suppose if you think about it, yes, if you've got 10 gigs of data on a 1 terabyte drive, then yes, the 10 gigs are secure, and the rest of nothing is not as secure. But there's nothing there, and you're trying to protect the data if you get my drift. Okay. So, does that make sense? That's where you set your GPO. You set that on in GPO and let that populate down to the users. Empowering your users, that's what we're trying to do here, is give them the benefit of some of the new features. So let's drop into a command prompt. I hope the black and green works okay for you. And if you remember what the manage BDE, BitLocker drive encryption, just do a help there so you can see what the commands are. BitLocker drive encryption. And what we're going to do is we're going to do a status. And that will tell us whether or not our drive is encrypted. You can see? And we can see it's fully decrypted, protection is off, it's unlocked, and there's no protectors. So if we enable, just check, I think I've got an F drive on this machine. Yeah, I've got an E drive. So if I now go and enable manage BDE on, let's use the used space, and I'm going to do it on my, see, I forgot already, D, I think it was, my D drive. Good man. That's it. Gives you a, that's it. See, you are paying attention. All right. So what it's going to do now is use space only. Drive encryption is now in progress, and that's going to run in the background, encrypting that drive. And we're going to come back in a second and see if it's been done. There's not any. Don't think there's any data on that drive, and it's quite a small drive. So let's just run that status now and see if it's. Hey, it's still. So on, there we go. It's use space only encrypted, 100%. Protection is off. Now, hey, why is protection off? Because I've just told it to put it on. Well done. Nice. So did you get that, guys? I know the guys at the front did. Use space only encrypted, and its protection is off, and yet it's on. So let's just drop it into the control panel, just so you can see different places where you can see this. And I'm going in the wrong place. Let's do my control X. Control panel's easier. And security system. And I want to go BitLocker. And we can see, look, it's waiting for activation in the middle. So let's click that and see what it says. All right. Now I turn it on, and it says, right, at this moment in time, you don't know it's on in the background, because that's been pre-provisioned. But what we're saying here is, give me a password, and then you're in control of your machine and your BitLocker. All right, so. Off we go. And then, quite importantly, because this is your data, this is your drive, you should be making a copy of where do you want that recovery key to be stored. If you use enterprise systems like MBAM, you can force that key to be saved in Active Directory. But here, you know, if this is your thumb drive or your data drive, your USB drive, you want to make sure that you've made a copy of that recovery key. Because if you forget your password, it's going to force you and ask you, look, how do I know that it's really your drive? All right. And I'm going to save. And notice by the top one is the Microsoft account. You can save it up into the SkyDrive, which is quite nice. So I'm going to save it up to into my downloads file. That's fine. And we can finally activate BitLocker, and we're good to go. So it's now activated. And we can probably drop back into... Here we go. So it's now... We can see the protectors are a password and a numerical password. Happy with that? Cool. And we'll just switch back. So what I'm trying to say is we're making BitLocker more accessible to your users, and that's what we need to be. One other thing. On the next one that I'm going to cover is automatic network unlock. Now, this is tricky, but it's worth doing. It's worth getting your head around because it might make your life... This is more of an administrative cool thing for you to use. All right, it's not really going to help your users unless they're empowered to use passwords every time on TPM. So it's going to save a little bit of time. What this does is allow your users to come in with their PCs in the morning, so long as they're connected to a wired being the operative word, a wired corporate network, they get their BitLocker unlocked automatically. Now, why is that a big deal? Why? Well, for the users, well, it's one less step. It's automatic. I'm at work. I plug the machine in. Because, again, we've got to remember what BitLocker is all about. It's all about protecting that box from that hard drive being stolen. It's not there to stop anything else, really. Now, in a corporate environment, let's say it's Patch Tuesday, why would you get this screen? Why would you get this screen pop up? And why would this be your IT admin's nightmare? Yeah, so you're trying to patch on a Patch Tuesday, for example. You've done a wake on LAN. You're trying to roll out the patches. So you boot up all the machines. You get this because the machine's been BitLocker enabled. What would you then have to do? You'd have to go around and actually unlock them all. But how can you do that? Because you don't know the passwords to the... It becomes a bit of a mess. So this feature, the automatic unlocking of the PCs that are on your corporate network, becomes quite cool. That makes sense. So, how does it work and what's it do? We're using WDS in effect and certificates, and we're saying, if I've got a UEFI firmware machine and I configure BitLocker network unlock, what happens is the PC boots up and contacts your DHCP server and says, give me the address of the WDS server because I trust the WDS server and it's going to hold my public key. So there's a key exchange between your client, so you need to install a certificate on this machine, and your WDS server. They talk to each other, and they release the keys, and that's what happens, and they're allowed to play. In effect, it unlocks it over the network because it trusts the WDS server. Okay? There's a couple of prerequisites we need. We need the key infrastructure. Now, that could, if you really needed to if you just wanted to try it in a lab, you could use a self-cert key for this. You need UEFI DHCP firmware. So your new motherboard that's got UEFI needs to be able to call a DHCP server, which, yes, most firmwares do. You'd then install the WDS server. Now, you don't need a full-blown WDS server working. It just needs to have that role enabled because it needs the transport mechanism. It needs to be able to respond. It needs to have that service running. Okay, to respond to the client request. We then need to do the network unlock GPO, which is a, we can just quickly, I'll show you that quickly. So allow network unlock at startup, yes or no. So that's another prerequisite. So if you don't have that enabled, it doesn't work. You need all these little pieces in place for it to work. Now, I'm not going to demonstrate this in full because I've not got a UEFI on my virtual machine. The last part is you need a DHCP server. Well, you're going to have one of those, so that should be fine. And finally, that you need the network unlock feature installed on Windows 12. So this is not a Windows 8 only feature. It's a better together scenario where you need 2012 server and you need Windows 8, and then it's all good. It's worth doing, especially if you're getting caught out on Patch Tuesdays. It's a good thing then. Moving on, BitLocker to go. This is the third pillar that I want to talk about with BitLocker. What does this mean? Why is this important? So let's see who's going to be honest. How many of you have lost a thumb drive in your life? How many of your users have lost thumb drives? Okay, you know. So, and okay, they are not expensive, are they? They are not expensive. Let's be honest about it. They are quite cheap. But what about the data that's on them? Do your users value your company data? Probably yes and no. Depends who you talk to. Your CEO probably does. You know, a junior member of staff, well, it's data. It's a Word file. I've protected the Word file. I don't know what else is on there. You know, we probably have 10, 15 USB drives in our house, thumb drives. And I don't know what's on each one. I don't know which one has got the most secure stuff and which one hasn't. So what I'm suggesting is, as a corporate responsibility, is you enable BitLocker on all thumb drives. It's very easy to do, and it will change the way your users think about security. And it will also stop you from getting in the headlines as, you know, you've lost 10 million files because you left a BitLocker. You left a file on a train or on a motorway service stop. So it's very easy to do. Let's have a quick look. We can enforce the ability to write to a removable drive unless it's been BitLocker enabled. Now, that's a little bit of pain for the first day, but if you sent a company memo around saying, look, come and collect your USB stick from IT support or whoever, you know, whatever department you've got, it's been BitLocker enabled already. The users can now change the passwords, so it becomes their device, their thumb drive. You know, we'd rather, if they're going to lose it, and this is not going to stop them from losing it, is it? What it's going to stop them from doing is not admitting to losing it, because they want a new one. Or you know that if they lose it, it's okay, because the data is encrypted. What it also stops is anybody taking data away from the business onto their personal USB drives. Now, I've rolled this out on a large company, and what happens is the company starts, you start to see no personal thumb drives anymore. Because they don't really want, you know, they start realizing that their company thumb drive will not work unless they put BitLocker on it, and they're not, they can't use BitLocker at home, you know, unless it's an extension of the business, so it's a home use for BitLocker. So they tend to use only the business one. So you tend to consolidate where all the data is. It's either on the PC, it's in the private cloud, or it's on that thumb drive. It's not on a random assortment of drives anymore. So it does actually safeguard your company a little bit. We'll use group policy to create this effective means of controlling your data. Where is it? It does work. Your users will start to benefit and start to appreciate the value of data in that company. You know, over a couple of days, they'll start realizing that you value security, you value the data, they do therefore. And especially if you give them a new shiny stick. You might have seen in Windows 7 the ability to restrict the certain type of USB stick as well. Yeah, and that, you know, so that, I'm not going to go through that now, but that's an additional level. You can say, look, here's your USB stick, and it's engraved, it's shiny, it's got our corporate logo on, and you can only use it if it's encrypted. You know, we could even restrict it to only use that drive as well, okay, if you want to go that far. All right. So a couple of the group policy commands we can use. You know, we can even configure the passwords that we're going to use, the complexity of the passwords. So you don't have to have a huge complex password. You don't want to make it too onerous on the user. We just want it to be BitLocker enabled. Okay. Let's have a quick look at this. I'm just going to come onto my other machine. So let me just drop into group policy like I did before and show you those settings. And so we're looking for removable drives this time, and we're enforcing drive encryption on removable type drives. So once we enable it, we're saying, look, we want to use encryption, and we're forcing it on removable drives. So once you enforce a policy, it comes into effect immediately. Once they log on, log off again, or you do the GP update force, that policy is now effective. They will not be able to put in their own USB drives anymore unless they go through the wizard to say, by policy, you've got to encrypt your drive. Right? And it's a one-off pain, takes a short amount of time. If you allow them to do the use space only encryption, that pain goes away a little bit because it's a little bit shorter, that time. So it's a good thing to do. Okay. So the last three or four items that we're going to do, we're going to fly through Credential Manager, hopefully. Who's never heard of Credential Manager? You might have seen it before in Windows 7. It's really taken prominence again because of what's called the Microsoft account. So we've seen in Windows 8, Microsoft account is becoming quite, it's there. You need it to do a lot of things. And users have seen this type of synchronization between various PCs. So, you know, we've all got tablets and PCs and phones, and we're using a Microsoft account, maybe even SkyDrive. What this feature does, it was in Windows 7, and it's been improved in Windows 8, is going to allow us to synchronize our web credentials, our web passwords, between those devices. And we might have seen this in other fields before. It's coming to Windows 8 because of the Microsoft account, and I'm going to show you that in a second. It now allows us to have a roaming credential locker, and this is what keeps the password secure. So it'll have the web address and the password and the username, and it's kept it all together in the credential locker. All right. By default, it's turned off in the domain. You can have both. Okay, but the idea was we don't want to be sharing domain passwords in the locker as well. So by default, it's off. You can turn it on. It's certainly very useful for tablet users to have, in effect, roaming websites, their credentials. And I'm going to demo that just now. So let me just come out of this one. And what I want is, so this is my Windows 8 machine. And I'm going to go to, let's do control panel first. So again, Windows key and X. And I'm going to go to a credential manager. Let's just type that in, credential manager. Here we go, credential manager. And we can see there's two components to it. One is the website, and the other one is the Windows credentials. Can you see that? And I've put a password in there, and we can have a look at that if you want. And it says, look, for my email address, that's my personal Amazon account, I've saved a password. I'm not going to click show. I'll have to change it pretty damn quick, otherwise you'd all be ordering things for me. But what I'll do is go to my website, and let's go to Amazon. And hopefully what we'll see is, there we go, it's Amazon, Andrew's Amazon. It's logged in for me because that credential's been stored in the credential manager. So that's making my life as a user easier. You're happy because it's protected within a secure credential locker, and that's been roamed because of the security involved with your Microsoft account. Now, how do you do that to create a new account? Let's just show you. If I do another one for, what have we got here? My personal email address. Okay, it's gone straight in. You know, that was, this lab was set up yesterday. I'm just going to come off that. I don't know what was in there. Is there anything interesting? But it's not asking for my Windows account because it's populated that already. So that's making me more efficient, more productive. Let me show you. So you still get the choice whether or not to save the password. It's not an automatic, it goes into the locker regardless. You get the choice each time. Do you want to save this password? And if you do, it can then be dropped into the credential locker. Okay. So let's have a look at where we set some of these settings, because there's an element of trust that needs to happen between devices. That's my young boy, and we're looking at users, and what we can see here is your passwords will not roam, will not be synchronized between devices unless you start trusting your PCs. And what does that mean? It means that you have set this up and that there's a second factor authentication to say, okay, you've asked for this, well, I've got your username and password because I'm on your machine. Prove that this is actually you, and this is quite cool. So what happens when we do a trustless PC? It fires me off, and I've got to now authenticate. Now, why am I authenticating here? Well, this isn't my Outlook.com web browser that uses my mail. It's a different site, isn't it? So I'm now going to authenticate this. Because this is my password, not my demo password. Got to think about it. Oh, look, so we can now see it says, look, help us protect your account by keeping it all secure. It's now going to text me a code. Now, I did try this morning, and it wasn't letting me receive incoming messages. So let's see if there was a can't receive text, email it. Okay, so I could email it. That's good. Click next, and I will now get an email. I could have selected text, and that works really, really quick. You get a text within a few seconds. You put in that second authentication in, so I've already put my password in, it then trusts this machine. That's really cool. Okay, so that's now going to send me an email. I put that in, and then that, if we just come out of there and go back to... So that trust, it will be trusted at that point, and I can come back and actually prove that at the end of the lab. The other thing I want to show you here is very similar. It's all about syncing your settings. Now, notice again in red, it says your passwords, which are stored in that credential locker, will not be synced unless you trust this PC. It's all wrapped up into that sync. So when you've gone from tablet to PC, you might see your desktop is syncing between you. That's a feature of your Microsoft account. And it's not going to carry forward the passwords unless you've trusted that PC. Okay. Let me come out of there. And go back to my slides. Thank you. So, one of the small features that's often overlooked is VPN Reconnect. Again, it was introduced in Windows 7. These are little nuggets of happiness I find when I go in and consult with businesses and say, look, you're using Windows 7 and Windows 8. Oh, well, we've got a mixed hybrid. And well, are you using all the different features, all the really cool things that enable your users to be more productive on the road? What do you mean, they say? VPN Reconnect, it's the smallest little thing, and it's easily overlooked. But when you think about what it actually does, it's a big player. Okay? It allows you to, certainly for mobile employees, for them to reconnect automatically to a VPN. I'm not trying to embarrass you, but can I get a show of hands? Who's never seen VPN Reconnect? Okay, good. I'm pleased because... You know, when I've been talking in the field, I find a lot of people don't know it's there. You know, and yet it has been there from Windows 7. And this almost makes me think about Microsoft Office. There's an old saying that says, you know, we only probably use 20% of Microsoft Office. All right, that means that 80% of the features and facilities, capabilities of Office are left unused. Now that's fine. If you're an accountant, you'll use Excel. If you're not an accountant, you probably don't use Excel as much. So that's understandable. But your users rely on you, and you'll come to TechEd, to be able to implement some of these really cool features. And it's worth piloting them. putting them in there in different departments and say, look, you're a mobile unit, you're on the road a lot, we're going to trial it with 50 of your users and we're going to give you this and give us some feedback, let us know if we're doing a great job. Your life becomes a lot easier once, yes, okay, you might have a few helpline calls initially, but just think of the satisfaction that you rolled out a new feature and it was a good job. So it requires, the reason why this wasn't really that popular back in 7, again, was because the hardware wasn't there to support us. The technology wasn't there. We didn't have IKE version 2. So, you know, that's a tunneling protocol that is now, you know, one of the de facto secure protocols that we should be using, that and SSTP. You know, back in the day, we'd be using things like PPTP. We'd be using L2TP. You know, L2TP is very, very good, but it doesn't allow us to do this VPN Reconnect. So let me tell you what VPN Reconnect does. If you're driving through in the UK, we have lots of trains and we have lots of tunnels. So we go through the tunnel, our VPN drops off because the internet has dropped off. What VPN will do is will notice that you've dropped the connection. It will have cached securely the password and the ability to reconnect. And then once it sees that you're back online again, it will automatically reconnect without the user needing to know. All right? So rewind and go back to a non-VPN reconnect scenario. The minute you go into that tunnel, your user knows about it, and they're starting to go reconnect, 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 and put the password in, and that becomes frustrating. Okay. If you're using direct access, it's using a similar technology to direct access, but you'll see in a second, if you've got the capability to set up that tunnel and use IKE version 2, this is two clicks. So, let me show you. So you can use the mic. Speak up. I didn't hear that. I don't know if anyone else did.
Not working. Oh, there we go. If you already have direct access in place, why would you be using this?
You wouldn't.
As well. Okay.
So unless you had, so direct access is for your corp net. You know, so when you're using mobile guys on the road, going back to your corp, if you had to do a secondary VPN somewhere else. So you wouldn't do a VPN to your corp net if you've got direct access. You know, direct access is, you know, is cool. Okay, so VPN, let's have a look at our VPNs here. And we can say, look, view VPN network connections. And we've got one here, workplace demo VPN. When I simply go into that and look at the properties, and look at my security, you can see by default that the type of VPN is auto-negotiated based on the two endpoints. What have you got on either end will make them more secure. You can see at the bottom, the most secure is the IKE version 2. I'll leave it on automatic. I'm not going to change the VPN. What I'm going to say is look at the advanced settings. That just died. There we go. And we look at the IKE version 2 tab. This is as simple as it gets, guys. We tick that box. By default, that box is not ticked. The mobility tick box. That is VPN Reconnect. And you can then specify how long do you want those credentials to be cached for. So if you're very secure and very conscious of security, drop that down to 10 minutes. Most tunnels, certainly in the UK, last no more than 10 minutes. If you're going through Switzerland, you're going to have some big tunnels. They're going to mountains over there. But you know, you can specify how long you want that to run for, to be in operation for. So when your VPN drops, how long do you want to cache those credentials? Okay. Tick that box. That is VPN Reconnect. Try it, use it. You do need to have IKE version 2 and this mobile tunneling protocol in place. Not a lot of people use that. We saw that by hand. You know, there was over half the audience not really heard of it and certainly not implemented it. Have a go. That's cool. So, I've got two more things to talk about. We've got Secure Boot and then Windows to Go. So, Secure Boot, this is the thing I was talking about it needs the hardware. It needs UEFI. If you haven't got it, you're going to see that become more prevalent in the next years. You know, now, you know, all the tablet surface Pro tablets, they've got this built in. And you're going to start seeing it more and more. Whereas 2 or 3 years ago, it's very, very hard to find a device. Now, this is not a Microsoft technology. This is a standards-based development. In the last 5 years, UEFI has become standardized, just like TCP/IP. So just bear that in mind. This is not something that Microsoft has invented. What they're doing is saying, look, we'll leverage this because it's a good thing. It's going to secure your platform before it even gets to Windows. If you pick a device up nowadays that's got a Windows 8 certified sticker on, it will have UEFI enabled. It will be a very secure base level for your PC. Okay. One of the things that was criticized when Microsoft announced with Windows 8 it was going to be using UEFI was, oh, well, does that mean that we can't install our own operating system on that tablet or on that device? Well, no, it didn't mean that. You can disable this. Now I'm going to show you a demo in a second that goes into UEFI Secure Boot, and it says turn on or turn off. By default, it is on because it's got the sticker saying Windows 8. If you turn it off, what's going to happen is it's not going to check on bootload to say, is this the version of Windows or the operating system that I shipped with? So this is an OEM thing. The OEM matches the UEFI firmware to the operating system that it installed. All right? And it uses certificates between the two. They're secure. It says the hash of that operating system is XYZ. I've got that in my secure locker. Yeah. And it compares the two. And if they're not the same, it goes through a process of remediation where it says, okay, someone's been tampering, what's been going on? Let me get my rollback feature and put what I think should be there on your machine. All right, so it doesn't destroy the machine. It says, I'll try and remediate this for you. It's all OEM hardware wizard based. This is not a Microsoft thing. Microsoft is just leveraging it and saying, that's a damn good thing. We're going to have that in our next OS. And that's what you've got now. All right. So how does it work? Well, how does the old one work? So legacy boot, what you've got on old machines and certainly XP machines will have a legacy boot. Now, these are not as secure. Now, I'm not trying to dish XP, but you've got until April next year. At that point, we don't know. So traditional legacy operating systems use BIOS. They will allow any OS to install. They will allow a malware to actually go in there and change that boot loader to say, load this version. You probably won't even know about it. So the danger there is you're running your Windows operating system and underneath there's a keylogger. And you weren't aware. Secure Boot will protect that from happening because it won't allow that tampering of the OS loader. With Secure Boot, what happens is, like I said, the OEM and Secure Boot say, here's the key. These two match. It's preloaded onto the machine. And therefore, only verified OSs can run. It protects against bootkits. And we might have heard about bootkits and rootkits. So, let's have a quick look at this video. What's going to happen is, I'm going to go to my control panel. This is a GUI-based secure boot installation. So HP have got a GUI-based console. HP BIOS settings. Notice people are still talking about BIOS, even though it's modern BIOS in effect. It's now UEFI. So it is interchangeable to a point. The correct term should be UEFI firmware. I'm trying to move away from BIOS, but, you know. So I recommend these things should be protected. There's a password in there. And we can now see on the left-hand side BIOS settings, and we'll scroll down, we've got the ability to turn on or off Secure Boot, and it's on by default. It's as simple as that, guys. If you want to turn it off, turn it off. You will need to reinstall your operating system at that point. So don't just play with it. Well, you've turned it off, so therefore there's going to be no handover of the key to say this is good. So you're... Depends on the machine. So it depends how it's been configured. HP didn't trash it. I've seen other installations do trash it. Some UEFI biases are more in-depth than others. That is a very simple one. It's on or off. Okay. If some malware, I'm sorry about the quality of this. This is actually do as a picture because I can. So some malware, if it does try and attack that initial boot up phase, you'll get this warning. So that initial signature is invalid. It's been tampered with. Okay? You'll try and reboot and it'll either work or it won't work. You will get to a point where what are you going to do? You know, report it to your IT support or let the device try and remediate. And on this one I'm going to show you in a second, there's a Samsung one that actually goes through that process. But I want to introduce trusted boot and measured boot at the same time so you can see the whole thing. They're all joined up together, all pre-boot environments. Trusted boot is checking the Windows files. So it's not the bootloader anymore, it's the Windows files against being tampering there. So again, the OS loader now, not Secure Boot, the OS loader is now checking to see if the bootloader, the Windows files are good to go. And if they're not happy with those, then it'll force you into the Windows 8 recovery, and it'll say, I think you need to recover from a previous version or repair these bootloader files. Okay? So we're seeing a stepped movement. We've got Secure Boot, which is UEFI. Then we've got Trusted Boot, which is your bootloader checking your Windows files. Measured Boot is almost like an audit. As Windows boots, Measured Boot, which is, this is a Microsoft feature now, is going to make a log of all those files and how big they are and if the hash, the security hash on all those files are good. We used to have something similar back in the day called SigVerif, signature verification in XP, where you'd go and verify the signatures for all the drivers. This is similar sort of thing to that, where it's verifying all the files and drivers are good in the boot loading. Okay? And that would then pass that database or that record to your malware engine to say, inspect that. That is what we started with. That's your base plate. That's your baseline. And monitor it from then onwards. So you've got Secure Boot, Trusted Boot, and then Measured Boot, all in that happy family to try and secure your machine before you even log in. So this is an example of a Samsung machine which found it had a problem. Okay, it then went into its own routine where it tried to do a rollback of its core settings to actually bring you Secure Boot back. Right. It then would go into prepare an automatic repair after it's diagnosed what it's doing, diagnosing which files need to be replaced, and then finally it'll then attempt to repair. So this is Samsung and Windows 8 now on that device trying to correct itself. Okay. So you're not going to see that unless you get modern hardware. So bear that in mind. So if it's a Windows 8 sticker machine, it's going to have that ability. Last thing I'm going to talk about is Windows to Go. And we're doing okay for time, so it's good. Who's heard of Windows to Go? Put your hands up, please. Oh, wow, that's nearly everybody in the audience. Who's used it? Who's deployed it? Okay, only about 20% of the audience have used it. So this is the concept of a USB stick. Okay, so a high-performance USB stick, and with a full-blown version of Windows 8 running on it. And there's various descriptions. Think about it as you can plug it in into any host, any Windows 7 or 8 capable machine. So that could be a home machine. Okay, you plug this drive in, and that is running your Windows 8 installation, your corporate edition, your corporate version, your corporate build. Okay, in effect, almost like being a parasite, if that makes sense. It's actually latched onto that machine. It's only using the processor and the video and the keyboard and the mouse. It's not using the internal hard drive. And by default, the hard drive's actually hidden away from the ordinary user. All right. But the idea being is, you've got a fully functional version of Windows running on thumb drive. And it's taken until really now, this, you know, the last 2 years, to have the hardware capable of running that. And that's why we've not seen this before. You know, you can imagine almost in the think tanks of Microsoft headquarters, them coming up with this idea years and years ago. You know, let's just run it on a thumb drive. Why do we need PCs? But it's the hardware that's taken its time. We needed to wait for the hardware to catch up, the speed of the hardware. And that comes an interesting caveat. It must have a certified drive. You know, I know when I started using this a couple of years ago, I went out and bought myself a 64 gig pen drive thinking, great, I've got a drive, I can use this. It's got to be certified by Microsoft. It's got to have the sticker saying, this has been tested. It is performant. It works really, really well. If you start using any drive, it won't work. Got to be, and I've got a web page on the bottom. The number of vendors now providing these drives has increased, which is great. There's a vendor downstairs, Iron Key, who's got a great demo on the Microsoft Windows booth there. There's a mobility booth. They'll demo this for you as well in more detail than what I'm going to do. Okay. Must use certified drives. It will work on USB 2 and 3. The certified drives are version 3, but they will work on a version 2 machine. Okay. It might not be as fast, and they come in sizes of 32 gig, 64 gig, 128 gig, and even portable hard drives now are enabled to have this. Okay. The idea being, and this is how you use it, is think of the drive, the thumb drive, as being your OS. You would not really want to be keeping your data on there for two reasons. One, that's not the modern way. The modern way is to use a private cloud, SkyDrive, or your own, you know, a public cloud. You know, your data should be mobile. If it's on a thumb drive, yes, it's mobile, but it's in your pocket. Yeah, you should. If you're using a corporate, you know, you get my drift. So, what I'm saying is, TPM by default is not supported using Windows Go, and that's because it's a portable device. Remember what TPM does? It locks your hard drive to that TPM chip. Now, that supposes that you marry those two together in a machine. Now, this won't marry the two together, will it? It's temporarily bonded, but they're not married. You're going to take that away. Yeah, so that's why TPM is disabled by default. However, you can still BitLock the drive. All right. These are the vendors we were talking about, and there's a little picture at the bottom. So there's five pictures there. Iron Key on the left-hand side, that's the vendor that's downstairs. And the one that you might have seen quite a bit of is the one on the right-hand side, which is the Kingston Data Traveller. So I've got a couple of those in my machine at the moment. I'm going to do a quick demo of booting to them. Right, let's go and do that demo. Let's do a demo. It's an ad hoc demo now, so we'll fire up my machine. And we'll go to... Let's fire this machine up. Well, let's just do this one first. We're in this machine. And what we need is, if we type in Windows to go, okay, so at the moment, no, I don't want to change that, so I want to run a machine, let's do it on my main machine. There we go. So Windows to go, this is where we can now, it's now going to inspect my hard drive. So the reason why it didn't appear before was I was trying to do it in a virtual machine and it didn't have access to the USB stick. That's why it wasn't giving me the option to build one, which is what I'm getting now. So because I've got two drives connected to my host machine at the moment, I'm actually going to select the DT, the Kingston one. Can you see it's a 29.8 gig available space, that's my 32 gig drive. So it's automatically found it, we could do a refresh. It will not find drives that are not performant. Just one second, so let me start this off, then we can ask some questions. So it's now looking for a WIM file, a WIM image, which could be your corporate build. You could just take a standard ISO, but you need to sys prep it. It needs to be available to be deployed. This is just like you're deploying to a real machine. And when you start using things like Windows Intune, well, let's just start this off then, and I can talk a little bit more. So this is an enterprise-based WIM. It's about 6 gig. Notice I can BitLocker it at source now. I can actually say BitLocker. I'm not going to say yes at this point because it'll take a little bit longer. Now, all what I'm doing right now can be done in PowerShell or it can be pre-provisioned. So let's just... It's now going to format the drive and start copying that WIM file onto the drive. So it's formatting. It's now preparing my drive. Right, so now we can talk a little bit more about it. So what's happening now is that is a fully managed device. You are licensed. If you, you know, this is only available as part of Windows Enterprise. So it doesn't come on any other SKU. This is one of those jewels in the crown scenarios. It's an enterprise benefit. So if you've got an enterprise license, you get this. You can therefore have your desktop PC or any PC at work and take a copy of that and put it onto a stick as well. You know, sysprep the PC at work and then put it onto create a WIM and deploy it onto a stick. Give that user that machine. You would manage it just like you would do any other machine in your estate. You would use antivirus, malware, you know, patching. It becomes a device. It appears in Windows Intune. It appears in System Center. Okay. Going to fire up an example of one here. So this is now using a demo that I've got. I'm going to turn this machine on. It's a virtual machine using, for the technical guys, it's using a pass-through disk to my other USB drive. All right. So let's just turn that on and see what happens. On the first time you boot it into a new environment, what will happen is it will install the drivers it needs from its, you know, from the WIM file. Just make this full screen. Here we go. So this is actually my, this is the University of York back in the UK. I created this image for them and deployed it. This is our standard image that we'll use. So ignore the times on those. And I'm just going to type in my... So this is now running directly to the USB drive. And if I just go to my desktop, you'll see that I've only got my 32 gig of space available to me there. So if I look at the computer, can you see I've got 29.4 gig? And that's why on the early editions, the 32 gig ones, you don't get a great deal of space left. So that's why you would recommend using your external storage or your cloud storage. This is just a portable Windows. And, you know, we've used it, we've given it to temporary staff, we've given it to external workers who are coming in, you know, on a ad hoc basis, and they work really, really well. You can, and I'm going to actually just demo this because it's very close to the end, take out my stick. You can turn it, take it out. As long as it's replaced within 60 seconds, I'm fumbling, things should still be fine. There we go. So we're still within. So 60 seconds is all you've got. And then it does get a little bit corrupted. So let's just wrap this up. These slides will all be available at the end. They're going to be online for you to download. I hope you're going to take away today some of the security features that I would like you to start using that will enable your users to be more productive, more effective, and fundamentally more secure. You know, I think by you giving them some quick wins, some low cost, some easy to implement security features, it will make your life easier and their life easier. There's various content available. Again, these slides are available at the end. Various sessions that have been recorded, various breakout sessions. Lots of track resources on Windows, the Windows Springboard site, for example. Windows to go directly, outlook.com. So what I would like to say is, and it's been my privilege to talk to you this morning. I'm really appreciative that you've come to this session. Please do leave some feedback. It's my first time presenting at TechEd. I would love to come back again. I would love to have your feedback so I can improve. So thank you for joining me this morning, and I hope you enjoy the rest of TechEd, and thank you.